Norm Shealy. Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thank you for joining me tonight on my show. Tonight we have Dr. Stephen Sinatra, and we're going to talk about his new book, along with Johnny Bowden, The Great Cholesterol Myth. And if you have heart problems or vascular problems of any kind, don't cut out on this show. You listen to every word of this show. This is one of the most... I had a heart attack in September, a big one. And this is one of the most important books I believe I've ever read. I had to learn all of these things in this book by spending hundreds of hours on the internet. And those hundreds of hours are in this one book. That's all you need to know. So thank you, Dr. Sinatra, for taking the time to come back on my show again tonight.
It's good to be here.
So I only have about 10 million questions. So I want you to tell us a little bit about you and where people can find you, and then I'm going to ask questions, but I'm going to save the very last few minutes for you to talk about anything that you want to talk about, okay? Just in case we miss something that you think is important.
Sure.
So where can people find you?
Well, they can find me at heartmdinstitute.com. That's my informational website. And that website basically has lots of videos, and I'm always updating it, and there's lots of Q&A on there. And then there's drsinatra.com, which is basically my commercial website. That's where, you know, there's lots of supplements and also a lot of copy on that website. And we're going to be doing a webinar on cholesterol coming up probably, I'm going to shoot a video on that, I think, in March. So that'll be available to anybody who wants to opt in and get that webinar on cholesterol. I'll be answering questions from all over America about cholesterol.
Well, be sure and send me that information, and I'll help you promote it, okay?
Oh, we'll do. Sure, we'll do.
Go and send me something about it. Okay, and your new book, The Great Cholesterol Myth, and the Earthing book, and you have other books, too, that I've not had the opportunity to see, but where can people find those books?
Oh, any bookstore or Amazon.com, and, you know, they'll be out. And then, Eva, I have another book coming out. I don't know if it's going to be in 2013. It may be early 2014, but that book is called Connection, and that's a sort of a spiritual book. Maybe we can talk about that one later.
Of course. You're welcome on my show anytime. You're a very entertaining guest, but your information is also scientifically valid, and that's the kind of thing I like. That's the kind of thing I love to talk about and promote. So if I ask you the first question and you had to pick one thing that causes heart disease and one thing that's least likely to cause heart disease, what would those things be?
Okay, the most likely cause of heart disease would be emotional stress. And in emotional stress, I would also include heartbreak. So that's number one. And the least likely to cause heart disease would be high cholesterol. And that would be my second answer to that one.
Well,
high
that
cholesterol
was not what I was expecting to hear, the first one. I was expecting to hear sugar, but wow, does that resonate with me. So do you think that heartbreak has anything to do with acidosis in the ventricle, possibly? Gestromphanthin to help. Help with that. Would that make any sense to you?
Well, you know, heartbreak is a big cause of heart disease because, or emotional stress of any factor can cause heart disease because what happens is it sets off hormonal pathways and it's almost like we're overdosing on our own hormones like cortisol or adrenaline or noradrenaline. And when you have these hormones that are being abundantly released in the body, it causes changes in the circulation. It can cause blood to clot, for example. It can cause potassium to go down, which can elicit cardiac arrhythmias. It can cause what we call a fancy term, which doctors refer to as endothelial cell dysfunction, which results from oxidative stress. These are fancy terms, but basically it's like accelerated aging of the inside of the blood vessels. So emotional stress to me is number one. Sugar is number two, but again, the least likely is cholesterol. And that, unfortunately, that's what the American public and most doctors focus on is cholesterol. But again, that's a myth.
So before we delve into that, I just don't want to let go of this emotional thing because it makes so much sense. What obvious things like meditation, I get that, okay? But what is there some nutritional things that we can do, supplements or anything to help reduce those cortisol levels or norepinephrine or noradrenaline? Because I know that's what I have. When you said that, it made the hair stand up on the back of my neck.
Really? Really? Well, the easiest thing to discharge emotional stuff or emotional toxicity is really to be yourself, to tell the truth. And, you know, the best thing for the heart is crying. I mean, when a person is open and is vulnerable and cries, crying is the best emotion we can have for healing the heart. Because when you cry, you release the heartbreak that we've all had. And when you release heartbreak, you're literally opening the heart up. You're not stifling the heart. So crying, to me, is one of the most important things that you can do. You know, it's amazing, Eva, but in 1984, I ran a workshop. I was in psychotherapy training at that time, and I was getting a degree in bioenergetic analysis. And we ran a Gestalt psychotherapy workshop. I was studying with a lot of disciples of Fritz Perls. And in this workshop, we had 44 participants, and a lot of them were women. We had more women than men. But what was kind of interesting was that the women in the workshop, over a period of like 2 days, they sort of networked with one another. They hugged one another. They cried with one another. They bonded with one another. Now, we collected 24-hour and 48-hour urines all through the workshop, and we measured stress hormones in the urines. And what we found was this. In the men, and by the way, the men were like lumps of clay. They didn't share anything. They didn't cry. They didn't get angry. They didn't show their emotions. They were just stuck, you know? And when we broke the codes, what we found was that the men had astronomical levels of stress hormones in their urine. And incidentally, 80% of them had heart disease. The women who cried and networked with one another and held one another, none of them had heart disease, and they all had very low levels of hormones in their urine. So that was the first time I actually realized that men who don't cry get heart disease. And
what's the relationship with potassium? Because that's always been I don't know why, but it's always something on my radar. I've bought books on, you know, college books on just potassium, trying to understand that. How does it affect that?
Well, the more cortisol you're secreting in the body, and cortisol comes from the adrenal gland. It's the hormone of vigilance. And what vigilance is, it's like waiting for the other shoe to drop. And when you're secreting a lot of cortisol, if you're living in fear, or if you're living in uncertainty, what happens is that you change the metabolism in your body, and you can make the blood thicker. For example, the platelets get sticky, and the potassium can get lower. And when the potassium gets lower, as a result of overdosing on your hormones, this can be a problem because when potassium is low, and if you ever had a cardiac insult, you could have a dreadful arrhythmia or malignant arrhythmia. So it makes sense to keep potassium levels high. That's why I really like coconut water, for example. You mentioned, what you can do, and coconut water is loaded with potassium. It's one of the highest beverages we can take that have high quantities of potassium. Fruits and vegetables have a lot of potassium. You know, a banana has like 600 milligrams. A white potato has like 800 milligrams. So there's lots of foods that contain potassium. And the truth is this, and they did a study at Harvard years ago. It was doctors. It was the Harvard alumni study. And what it showed was that doctors who ate between 3 to 4 grams of potassium a day had far less stroke than, you know, doctors who ate only 2 to 3 grams of potassium a day. So potassium is protective of the body, particularly for cardiac events and stroke events. However, potassium can be influenced by emotional stress, so it behooves us to really be cautious of the foods we take in. And also, a lot of us take in diuretics, for example, to lower blood pressure, which will deplete the body of potassium. So we have to be really careful about what drugs we put into our body, because this can have a negative effect. And the other thing that people don't realize, but if they drink coffee or tea or caffeinated beverages, it'll wash out potassium and magnesium out of the body through the urinary tract. So we have to be careful about these precious minerals. And they are precious, because when they do drop in the body, you know, illness and events may occur.
That brings up a question that I wasn't prepared to ask you, but it makes me think of it now about magnesium. I do, Norm Shealy's a friend of mine, and Norm preaches about transdermal magnesium, and so I've been doing that for years. And I'm one of the few people in the world that doesn't have a deficit in my intracellular magnesium. But once I had my heart attack, I learned something, and I don't really know what it is yet. I just know that I've learned it, is that even though my intracellular levels are high, I must use like some magnesium glycerate or some magnesium carbonate to make sure I have proper bowel movements. And I always thought that because I don't have a deficit, like most people, that I didn't need to do it, but I found that not to be true. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, it does. So in other words, if you do take magnesium carbonate, your bowel movements are better?
Yeah, and I see more bile in them.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
they're more green, like I'm really cleaning out my gallbladder.
Yeah, no, magnesium is great because, do you remember the milk of magnesia Grandma used to give you? Well, that was called magnesium oxide. And in a tablespoon, there would be like 2,000 milligrams. And what magnesium oxide does, it stimulates the colon, has a direct stimulatory effect on the colon. And whenever you stimulate the colon, you can also stimulate the gallbladder as well. That's why coffee enemas are a great way of detoxing, because when you put caffeine in the rectum, it'll cause a simultaneous constriction of the gallbladder, where you'll cleanse the gallbladder at the same time. So it's really important to realize that magnesium is one mineral. Even though you have a lot in your RBCs, in your red blood cells, a lot of people are deficient. But even for yourself, if you do take magnesium, it helps you, you know, get a cleansing effect. And by the way, that's one of the best side effects of magnesium that that people really need to understand, because when I was practicing medicine on a day-to-day basis, you know, obstipation and constipation were major factors, particularly in people over the age of 70. And magnesium is one natural antidote that not only you'll get a cleansing effect, but it's really good for you at the same time.
Thank you for explaining that. That makes so much sense to me. And I've thought about it, but didn't know if I was making it up in my head or if it really had a valid point.
No, keep taking it. Keep taking it. And remember, you know, we don't get much magnesium in a diet because the soils are real depleted. So it just makes sense to take it as a supplement, either topically or orally.
Okay, so let's get back to your book now. Everybody in the world believes that, in fact, when I had my heart attack, my first thing this doctor did when he walked in is he handed me, on the day he discharged me, and said, here's your prescriptions. And I looked at it and I saw a statin. And I said to him, do you know what this does? And he rolled his eyeballs at me and said, well, and he looked at his feet, I've read about it. And I said, so you know it depletes CoQ10? Well, I've read about it. Well, where's my prescription for CoQ10? Well, you got to get this cholesterol thing under control. So can you tell us, is that really the thing that gives me the heart attack? Or gives people the heart attack? Is it the cholesterol? I'd like for you to explain that myth, please.
Sure. First of all, you know, cholesterol is found at the scene of a heart attack, but it's not the perpetrator. It's not the main character. cholesterol to me is way down on the list. Let's talk about other risk factors that are far more important. Metabolic syndrome, for example, or higher blood sugar or insulin resistance, where you have high triglycerides and low HDL. That's a huge factor because you have much more inflammation than just, say, a high cholesterol. You know, mercury in the body. You know, mercury can oxidize cholesterol and make it inflammatory. So heavy metals or insecticides or pesticides are big factors. Radiation is a factor. Certainly cigarette smoking is a huge factor. And then is, you know, high blood pressure is a risk factor. But then there's other risk factors that are equally as important. And again, I look at the toxic effects of, you know, bisphenol A, for example, in plastics is a big risk factor. Bisphenol A, in other words, it's found in plastics, which is a major risk factor now for hypertension. So in your case, there are other factors in the blood. I call it toxic blood syndrome, which would mean things like homocysteine or fibrinogen. These are inflammatory phase reactants, certainly C-reactive protein, which is another cytokine which reacts to inflammation in the body. And then there's Lp(a). I don't know if your doctor checked you for Lp(a), but Lp(a) is a very, very small particle of cholesterol that gets inside the nooks and crannies of blood vessels, and it does oxidize blood vessels very quickly. It also causes blood clotting. So I hope your doctor checked you for Lp(a) and homocysteine and fibrinogen. Ferritin is another one where if I worry about too much iron in the blood, because iron can also oxidize the LDL cholesterol and make it inflammatory. But for most people, their cholesterol is not oxidized. It's not inflammatory. And I generally like to tell people to get a particle test to see if they do have an inflammatory type of cholesterol. But I'm much more interested in what their triglyceride level is and what their HDL is. Because if you have high triglycerides, Eva, and low HDL, let me give you an example. I would see this all the time. I see a woman come in who has a triglycerides of 300 and an HDL of like 30 to 40, and she'd have a ratio of like 7.5 to like 10. Where if you put the triglycerides on top and the HDL on the bottom, that's the ratio. Now, let's look at the best ratios. Somebody comes in with a triglycerides of 90 and an HDL of 50. That means your ratio is less than 2. So ratios less than 2, I see very, very, you know, little heart disease in these people, in people. Ratios greater than 8, 9, or 10, I shudder. Ratios greater than 5, I really worry about. So the higher the ratio, the more I get concerned. And then, you know, what your doctor could do is, in addition to checking all those other inflammatory mediators like fibrinogen and C-reactive protein and homocysteine, et cetera, he or she could also do a particle test on you to determine whether your particles of cholesterol are the inflammatory type or the non-inflammatory type, and also measure the number of particles as well. So if a person has, let's say, a high cholesterol, but the particles are fluffy, non-inflammatory, who cares? I mean, who cares what their cholesterol is? On the other hand, if a person has a high cholesterol and they have these type B particles, which are like a little BB shot, or if they have high Lp(a), which is frequently determined genetically, these people can have an inflammatory type of cholesterol, and those inflammatory types need to be neutralized. But the truth is, the statin drugs don't do it. You know, you
so
need other
if you have like, those B particles, can you change them to A particles with your diet
absolutely.
Or with
yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You can change A to AB and even to A. So, you know, that's where, you know, things like niacin comes in or natokinase comes in. These are targeted supplements that can change the morphology of a BB shot, very small particle, to a higher particle. Even olive oil can help do this, or saturated fats. Saturated fats in the diet can change smaller particles to larger particles. You want to avoid the trans fats. The trans fats will make the small particles even angrier. So people need to realize that you know, what they put in their mouth and what their diet, what they take into the diet, can affect particle size as well. And we wrote about that in The Great Cholesterol Myth.
It's a great book. I knew that niacin helped with cholesterol, but I didn't realize that that's what it did, that it can change it like that.
Yeah, niacin can do it. You know, pantothen is vitamin B5. That can do it, like 900 milligrams a day. You know, I use both of those. The problem with niacin, though, Eva, is that it's a hard supplement for people to adjust to, because a lot of people get hot flashes with it, and they get itchy skin when they go to higher doses. So whenever I tell people to use niacin, I start at 100 milligrams, and I'll have them maybe eat apple pectin beforehand and maybe even take a baby aspirin. But the higher doses of niacin, 500 milligrams and above, people get really itchy, and they get hot. They get hot flashes, and I used to warn them about that. But niacin's a great, you know, I call it a drug, but it's really a supplement. So it's a great, you know, nutrient to take to alter the morphology of cholesterol. But I also like natokinase, and that also will help, as well as lumbrokinase. These are nutrients that will help neutralize Lp(a), which is a very, very, like I said before, a very small particle that can be very inflammatory in blood vessels. So I would hope that you would have your Lp(a) checked in addition to, you know, you want to know what your HDL is, you want to know what your triglycerides are, you know, to scientifically attack the problem. Because remember, in your case, you know, your cholesterol can be totally fine, and you don't want to take a statin drug, you know, if you don't need to.
I'm not going to take a statin drug. But I personally, I've had all of those tests and many more. But I want my listeners to know, because when I had this heart attack, I learned so much. And I want them to know that they have hope and that they don't have to take that statin drug. I had to take it for 2 months until I could get a program implemented, you know, figure out what it was I wanted to do. First of all, find out what was available for me, and then figure out what resonated with me. And it, like, the statin itself, like, to killed me with the pain. My shoulders, both shoulders started falling apart. My arms started falling apart. My, you know, everything was falling apart. And it bedridden me. And I'm only 53, you know, and I'm active.
Yeah.
So I want the people to know they have a choice.
And you know, I'll tell you one thing, Eva, right? I've used statins in women for about a decade, and I was unimpressed in women, very unimpressed. When I was on the Oz show, he asked me how many women in my practice did I have on statins, and at the end of that decade, I had less than 1% who had heart disease. So when it comes to women, I'm not a big fan of statins. The only time I use statins is in middle-aged men. So if I had a 53-year-old male with, you know, a proven heart attack or a stent or a bypass, I would use a statin in a male, because males have the most to gain and the least to lose. Because remember, these statins have horrific side effects. Mm-hmm. So, but in men, I honestly thought that statins helped men. But it wasn't from cholesterol lowering. See, that's the big lie. The way statins work is that they thin the blood. So a lot of men have low HDLs. And HDL, the higher your HDL, the thinner your blood, because HDL thins the blood. But in men, with HDLs of 25, of 30, of 35, I was very concerned. And, you know, a statin in a male acts like an anti-inflammatory, thins the blood, and also acts like an antioxidant. So I have no problem in a middle-aged male with coronary disease, as long as I give a couple hundred milligrams of coenzyme Q10 at the same time. Mm-hmm. Eva, do you remember what your HDL is?
I'm
the number?
Looking for it right now. It wasn't the worst thing. It wasn't the best thing. I did not have any C-reactive. Here it is right here.
Tell me your HDL and your triglycerides.
My triglycerides are 267.
What was it?
267.
Yep.
My non-HDL cholesterol was 156.
And what was the HDL?
Total HDL, wait a minute, let me start over. Total LDL, 120.
Yep.
Total HDL, 52. Total VLDL, 36. And total cholesterol, 208.
And the triglycerides, did you get the triglycerides?
67. And
67?
I did have that that liver enzyme issue that goes on. I don't know what that is, but I was told that I had that thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what
and your triglycerides again was 67 or 267?
267.
The triglycerides. Now, do you have any diabetes in the family or anything?
No. I mean, in my family I do, but I did do that test, and the Ralph Hallsworth did it. You know him. And he said that I had no sugar diabetes.
So your hemoglobin A1C was normal?
Yes.
Because your ratio... your ratio is around five, about five. So you're in that area of inflammation. And are you thin or are you a little overweight?
I'm probably about 15 pounds overweight.
Yeah.
But
so in your case...
I have changed my whole life, Steve.
Yeah.
I'm doing paleo diet. I eat lentils and legumes, and I eat lots of kale and fresh vegetables. I eat no sugar. Not even fruit. I might eat a few berries, but no sugar.
No, berries.
At all.
Berries are good. Yeah, you're doing the right thing, because if you can lose a little weight, the triglycerides will come way down, and you're taking omega 3s, right?
Inches, but no pounds.
You lost inches, but no pounds.
Yeah.
Well, basically, you know, in your case, you know, a little more exercise, a little weight reduction, and you'll correct, these triglycerides will come down. And because you might have a little metabolic syndrome with that ratio. Do you have any, like, high blood pressure or anything?
Yes, I had pretty high blood pressure.
Yeah, you see, so there's inflammation going on in the body. But again, for you, you're on the right diet, and, you know, omega-3s would be a must for you.
And I'm doing acetylcholine drip. And I'm doing large amounts of glutathione, and I'm doing the PK protocol, and I'm doing oral phosphatidylcholine and glutathione, but I don't want to get stuck on me. I want to make this for my people and my show.
Okay.
I mean, I want to talk about me, but that's selfish, so I feel bad.
Well, not really, because you're going to help a lot of people, because a lot of people have the same thing you have going on. It's amazing. Everybody's the same, and everybody's different at the same time.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I went back and had a CT scan.
Yep.
About 5 months after I started my protocol. I do probably 100 supplements a day of different kinds of things, most of them that's on your list here, nidocaine, D-ribose, and some niacin, you know, those things. And I went and had a CT scan, and my ejection fractal and my heart function increased 42.8% in 30 days.
That's great. That's wonderful. So you're on the mend.
Yeah, I was excited. And the doctor that I went to see said, "I remember you. You're that lady that said she was going to heal her heart." And he laughed. He didn't laugh. He scoffed at me. And I made him look at these tests, because I got the CT scan on my own and took it to him. And he said, "Well, I only have 5 minutes." And he looked at it, and then he really looked at it and spent like 20 minutes analyzing the test that I had today, well, 3 weeks ago, and the test that they did back in September. And he looked up at me and he went, "Lady, I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop, because you just went from a lady who was going to be sure and die a sure death within 5 years to a lady that doesn't have to worry about dying from a heart attack." So I know it's possible to my listeners. It's possible.
Oh, no, and it's something that I was seeing, you know, day in and day out. Just remember this, and anybody with a heart attack, so if anybody's listening or if anybody that knows a loved one with a heart attack, the body has this innate intelligence to heal. The body can heal. I mean, what we've learned about stem cells over the last decade is that in the period of one's lifetime, the heart cells are replaced maybe 4 times. So if you've had a heart attack and you hang on for another 10, 20 years, you know, portions of your heart are going to be replaced by the natural stem cells in the body. All you have to do is just give the heart what it needs, and you're doing it. You're giving it CoQ10, you're giving it magnesium, you're giving it ribose, you're giving it carnitine. You know, I call it metabolic cardiology, but you're giving it a metabolic cardiology approach. And I got to tell you, Eva, I've had dozens of patients on heart transplant lists that refused transplants when they got better. And the reason why they got better is because when you do a metabolic approach and take these nutrients, what you're doing is you're building ATP or adenosine triphosphate into the heart cells. So you're building energy into the heart cells. And when you're building energy into the cells, this buys time for the natural healing process of the body to take over. Because the body's innate intelligence wants to heal. The way we mess it up is with bad diets and sugar and pharmaceutical drugs. That's how it gets all messed up. And basically what, you know, if a person absolutely has to have a pharmaceutical drug to survive, I mean, they have to have it. The problem is most of us take far too many pharmaceutical drugs. And remember, pharmaceutical drugs are not only mitochondrial toxins, but many of them also deplete nutrients at the same time. So it behooves us to really, you know, give the body the necessary stuff, but only the necessary stuff, and try to do it naturally as much as you can. Unless if you're having symptoms. If you're having symptoms, then you must, you know, take pharmaceutical drugs so you can buy time for the body to heal itself.
So if I have something on my sheet that says concentric left ventricular hypertrophy, is that the right way to say that word? Is that something that I can hope to heal one day?
Well, look at it this way. Sure, you can help heal it, but you have concentric hypertrophy probably from high blood pressure. So, again, in your case, if you are 15 pounds overweight and you can lose 5 or 10 pounds, blood pressure is going to come down. If the blood pressure is related to stress or overweight or inflammation, address those areas.
I've had a huge problem with potassium. It's really weird. I don't know how to describe it, but I know
it's been very low.
If
the potassium has been low, I'm sure they checked your adrenals, and I'm sure they, you know, the conventional doctors looked at this. But again, you know, try to get more potassium in the body. Potassium is a very, like, that's why I mentioned coconut water before, because potassium is a very healing mineral for the body. And unfortunately, a lot of Americans are deficient in not only magnesium, but potassium as well.
Okay, that emotion thing makes so much sense to me. I know that's what it is. Anyway, and I just know it. So I'd like to ask you about something that, and I didn't get all the way to the last page, so this might be in there and I just missed it. Do you know anything about strumpanthin? And do you have any comment about that? Do you strumpanthin?
Astaxanthin?
Sorry?
Did you say astaxanthin, A-S-T-A?
G, like go, strumpanthin, a West African herb. Do you
G,
know that?
Go ahead.
S-T-R-O-P-H-A-N-T-H-I-N.
You know, I've heard about it, but I have no direct experience with it.
I was just curious. That's all right. So let's go back to our questions. I have a million more. And I want to save some time for you. If someone were to take niacin to deal with the cholesterol, what would you recommend a dosage, and what form?
Well, I like pure niacin. I like the one that flushes, because the non-flush niacins I was very disappointed in as far as efficacy. Now, if people can tolerate the hot flash, I tell them to start off with 100 milligrams, and they can keep doubling it. They go to 200 and then 400 and then maybe, you know, 600 or 1,000. But they have to do it slowly. And then to help prevent the flush, sometimes chewing on a baby aspirin will help. Sometimes taking niacin after a meal will help. Or even using apple pectin, you know, like having an apple beforehand will help. So the problem with niacin is it's a very, very effective nutrient, but the side effects, the flushing, can be terrible. I mean, I've had patients, you know, drive themselves to the emergency room in panic because, you know, they thought something strange was happening in their body. And the truth is when you have this niacin flush, you know, you do feel different, and people can panic and end up in an emergency room. So I warn people about the flush.
Are you right?
I'm sorry?
You do it consistently, I mean, every day and not miss a dose, it'll stop, right?
Oh, yeah, it'll stop. Oh, yeah, people get used to it, yeah. I mean, my own personal case, I used to take niacin, but I could only get up to 500 milligrams before I had to stop. I could not go higher than 500, and I was flushing.
Do you have to worry
about
your
liver
with that?
You know, diabetics need to worry about niacin because You know, diabetics can have a, what we call a fatty liver, and I don't like to give niacin to diabetics. So that's one population I would like to restrict niacin from. I would rather see that population take pantothene, vitamin B5, 300 milligrams three times a day.
Okay, that's it. Why is that?
Why, excuse me?
What does the B5 do?
B5 is very similar to niacin in that it can take small particle LDL and make it fluffier.
Oh.
And, you know, I like B5. There's another nutrient I really like. You probably haven't heard of it. It's called citrus bergamot. This comes from Calabria, Italy, Sicily, actually. And it's it's from a citrus tree. And basically, it has a lot of what we call flavonoids in it and polyphenols. But what citrus bergamot does is it takes, it lowers not only blood sugar and hemoglobin A1C, but it lowers triglycerides at the same time. And to me, that's a trifecta when it comes to, you know, working on inflammation. The lower the blood sugar, the lower the triglycerides, and the higher the HDL, the more immune system support you get, and the better it is for your heart. So I really like citrus bergamot. The other thing is, there's research on it right now looking to see if it can take small particle LDL and make it fluffier. I'm waiting for that research to come out, and that's ongoing right now.
So what is a typical, and I'd just like to say, even though Dr. Sinatra is a medical doctor, we are not attempting to diagnose or treat you for anything. This information is just that, information purposes only. So I just
right.
want to get you off the hook there, and me. So what about glutathione? Does it benefit at all to do oral glutathione? And if you do take it, do you need to take it sublingual, or does it do anything?
Well, you know, glutathione is a tough one. I mean, I think it does help sublingually. I mean, orally, if you swallow it, I don't think it's going to help, but I think you'll get a partial effect sublingually. I mean, I've seen glutathione work really nice IV. I used to give it to my own patients with Parkinson's disease 10 years ago in the office. So I liked glutathione. I mean, and I know some of my neurological colleagues use it on a day-to-day basis. Glutathione IV definitely works. I've seen it. I've seen the difference in people. Sublingually, yes, I think it works to a degree, but not as good as it does IV.
Okay. And vitamin C?
Vitamin C IV is great. I mean, you know, a lot of the naturopaths give Myers cocktails where they'll give a few grams of vitamin C with magnesium and other, you know, other nutrients. I like vitamin C. I happen to take at least a couple of thousand milligrams a day in my vitamin arsenal. The only downside to vitamin C that I know of is of people with lots of floaters in the eye. If you do have lots of floaters and you take thousands of milligrams, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 milligrams of vitamin C, that might have a negative impact. And I only learned that recently from an ophthalmologist only at a conference, you know, 6 months ago.
What does it do?
Well, the vitamin C can have a negative impact on floaters in the eye. So, but again, the only other negative impact of vitamin C that I do know of, other than the eye, although vitamin C is good for glaucoma, remember that. But if people carry the gene for hemochromatosis, where they have an iron overload in the body, there's about maybe 40 million people that carry that gene. It's a heterozygous gene. If they have the recessive gene, then they do have hemochromatosis, where the body absorbs far too much iron and it gets deposited in various tissues, including the heart, and people develop heart disease from it. But taking too much vitamin C in somebody with the gene for hemochromatosis can enhance the absorption of iron, and you don't want to get iron overload because this is a pro-oxidant in the body and can cause inflammation.
What about, you talk in your book, well, let's go back to fats for a minute. You talk about trans fats. Everybody thinks that canola oil is the biggest thing that ever hit the world. What do you think about canola oil and corn oil? What should they be frying with if they're going to fry?
If they're going to fry? Well, I hope they wouldn't fry, but if they're going to fry, I would tell them to use coconut oil. Coconut oil is safe. It's a saturated fat. It's the least resistant to, it's the most resistant to oxidation. And canola oil is dreadful. I mean, canola oil is great for machines, but it's not good for the body. And, you know, this is another myth that's been generated over the years. I mean, canola oil is toxic to the body. Corn oil is also toxic. I mean, there are omega-6 oils. And you don't need the omega-6 oils. They're far too abundant in the environment. I mean, go to a grocery store and look at a package, and it'll say, you know, canola oil in it. And they use canola oil because it's cheap and it's a great preservative. But it's also, if it says canola oil and is partially hydrogenated on the label at the same time, then you're dealing with a very inflammatory situation if you eat those foods on a chronic basis, because, you know, anything that's, you know, on a shelf that's in a box or a can that has partially hydrogenated in it will cause inflammation. Remember the cookies your grandma used to make? After 3 days, they would be stale because they weren't cut with the hydrogenated oils. Like, and now you can buy something in a grocery store that's 6 months to a year on the shelf.
Hey, you're absolutely right. Is that what it is?
That's what it is. It's the partially hydrogenated oils. So, you really got to get away from those because those cause enormous.
I don't use them. I don't have them in my house. But
if people want to fry, if they want to, you know, do some light sauteing and they want to use coconut oil, that's great. Coconut oil is really healthy.
Olive oil, a cold pressed olive oil? That's what I use.
Well, if you're going to fry in olive oil.
Well, I don't fry, but I might saute something with a tablespoon.
Yeah, if you saute in olive oil, you want to saute at low heats, not very high heats, and you want to use a very light olive oil. You do not want to use an extra virgin olive oil for sauteing because that has a low dew point, and the monounsaturated fat will become more saturated, which is okay, but you're changing the architecture of the olive oil.
Olive oil
is great when it's not heated. Say that again, Eva.
Cold pressed, a good thing to use? That's what I'd always heard.
Well, cold pressed, if it's a light olive oil, it's okay. If it's extra virgin, it's not okay. But cold pressed is okay. Yeah.
Okay, what about folic acid and heart disease? If you have
folic acid is very important. It's in the B vitamin class. I put it in a lot of my supplements because a lot of people are deficient in it. There is a problem with folic acid. I mean, first of all, folic acid is good for you. I mean, everybody on the planet should be taking at least 400 to 800 milligrams a day of folic acid, at least, because this is one nutrient that, you know, not only protects, you know, young mothers from neural tube defects and congenital birth abnormalities, you know, in their offspring, but folic acid really protects you from heart disease at the same time. Now, there are different varieties of folic acid, and what we're seeing in America today is have you heard of methyl tetrahydrofolate, MTHFR deficiency?
Yes.
Does that ring a bell? Okay.
Yes.
Well, basically, a lot of people, if you measure the folic acid in the blood, it can be very high because it's not being utilized. There are people that have acquired defects in folic acid metabolism, and it's called MTHFR. It has to do with genetics, but the environment is sort of, we're seeing it more and more often. And what I've been doing in some of my supplements is I've been adding MTHFR, which is a highly bioavailable form of folic acid, a very, very expensive form of folic acid, like 20 times more expensive than the common forms of folic acid, but it bypasses like 5 biochemical steps. So if people cannot use folic acid for any reason, you know, an acquired genetic deficiency, inborn errors in metabolism, gluten sensitivity, I mean, it could be anything. But what I'm doing is I'm recommending small doses of MTHFR, and I just added like only 100 micrograms in one of my vitamin formulations, and I'm going to try to get it in all my formulations because I think what we're seeing today is not only heart inflammation but brain inflammation, and we need MTHFR in the brain to protect the brain from inflammation. So this is a very advanced form of folic acid. Folic acid is still good. I mean, I still use it all the time, but now I'm leaning towards a much more sizzling form of folic acid, so to speak, and that's the MTHFR.
Is that, can you take it orally? My doctor gave me a shot that I had to take of some kind of folic acid.
That was B12. That was B12 probably.
No, it was folic acid, and it had something to do with calcium. And it was very expensive for like 12 shots, I think, or 10 shots. It was like $100. And each shot just had like two, I guess, micrograms in it.
Hmm.
But it was outrageous.
Sure, it wasn't B12, huh? Because B12 is administered. It wasn't methylcobalamin. That word wasn't used. No.
Oh.
I don't know what he was giving you. But, you know, any of the B vitamins, I love. You know, B12, folic acid, B6 was pyridoxine. This 5-pyridoxal 5-phosphate is the most active form of B6. These are all important vitamins in preventing heart disease, and they're great for heart health, and they're great for brain health at the same time.
Okay, let's talk about D-ribose just for a moment, because most people have never heard of it, and then I want you to take the rest of the show. We've got about 11 minutes, and talk about whatever you want to talk about, because we've been kind of... I've been selfish and talked about me.
No, you can ask the questions, Eva. These are good questions. Okay, D-ribose is a sugar that is a reducing sugar, but it's a kind of sugar that has a low glycemic effect in the body, which means that when you take it, it's not going to raise the blood sugar. It's going to lower the blood sugar. And the body makes ribose. Now, it's kind of interesting, you know, some of your listeners may have remembered from high school biology or college chemistry about the hexose monophosphate shunt. We call it a pentose shunt in the body, where the sole purpose of that shunt was to make ribose. Because we don't get ribose in the food supply. The body has to make it. So unless we take it as a supplement. So basically, when you take ribose, and if the body can't make it back fast enough, you need ribose because it forms the center of the ATP molecule, which is adenosine triphosphate. And what people need to realize is ATP is sort of our chi energy. It's the energy of life. It's what gives the cells, you know, the cellular energy. And the higher your energy in the cell, the more vibration of the cell and the healthier the cell. And
mm-hmm.
what we have to realize is that in heart disease, and the reason why I wrote the book Metabolic Cardiology, is that people with any form of heart disease, diabetic, mitral valve prolapse, high blood pressure with an enlarged heart like yourself, you know, concentric hypertrophy, mitral regurgitation, even an athlete's heart, somebody with a heart attack, a stent, or a bypass, any person with any form of heart disease, the body can't make back the ATP quick enough, especially when people are symptomatic with shortness of breath or chest pain, because we use up the ATP quickly. The body makes it back, but not fast enough. So that's why we need to take ribose, because ribose forms the center of the ATP molecule. And if you give people ribose, and especially if they're taking carnitine and CoQ10 at the same time, you'll end up increasing the turnover of ATP. And ATP is not only important for energy, but ATP repairs cells. That's very important. It restores the energy, it rejuvenates the cell, but it repairs the cell at the same time. So I'm a big fan of metabolic cardiology, because when you take ribose, Q10, carnitine, and magnesium together, I call it the awesome foursome, where now you're not only breathing life into your heart cells with energy substrates by increasing the energy, but you're also repairing the heart cells at the same time. And remember what I said before, the body's innate intelligence will take over. When you give it ATP, you're going to be buying time for the body to heal itself naturally. And that's where our intrinsic stem cells come in. So the reason why I think metabolic cardiology really works is because it does buy time. And remember, the body will take over and heal itself. We just got to give it the right stuff. And the right stuff isn't just, you know, healthy organic food and healthy water and healthy sunlight. You know, those are all, I call them, you know, God's simple cures. But basically, we want to discharge the body of emotional toxicity. We want to be grateful. We want to increase our vibration by being true to ourselves and, you know, living honestly. You know, even telling a lie, Eva, I think I told you this on the last show with grounding. We learned that through grounding, through lie detector tests, Even telling a lie, it betrays the autonomic nervous system and it lowers your vibration. So what I would tell your listeners is that, you know, to sum this up, I would just say that anything to raise the body's vibration, the body's consciousness, the body's energy level, cellular energy level, anything to raise that level will put it in the path of healing. Put it in the path of healing. Now, what are some things that will lower your vibration? Well, certainly drugs and alcohol will lower the vibration. Living in a false self, living your life as a lie, living in the energy of entitlement, where you know you feel you're entitled, as opposed to having love and gratitude. Love and gratitude will increase your vibration. Loving yourself will increase your vibration. So emotional toxicity or emotional blocks will decrease your vibration. And what we really need to do is, you know, follow the voice of our heart, follow our intuition. So, you know, we're living in tough times now. We're living in chaos, but there's a lot of opportunity in chaos. And what we need to do is we need to ground more. We did that on your last show where, you know, we assimilate the energy of Mother Earth. We get that higher vibration into our body. We drink healthier water, healthier food. We live honestly. In other words, we live in our true self. We tell the truth. And then we can meditate and pray. And when we're doing that, we can ask the Ascended Masters for guidance.
You know, one day, Steve, I want to interview you about your enlightenment because I know it's there. And I also know that everybody that's had an enlightenment experience has gone through a dark night of the soul because you know way too much not to have had that experience.
Well,
one
probably,
day you got to let me do
probably.
That.
But what I was going to say is the answer will be giving in your intuition. So we're all powerful human beings. We just got to trust our intuition. And the answer will be there.
It's a pleasure to know you. To find a medical doctor that's spiritually aware and awake. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Eva.
Don't hang up yet. Tell us one more time. We've got 5 minutes, actually.
Oh, okay. All right.
I just, the more you talk, the more I realize how spiritually aware you really are because you know things that typical doctors don't know, and I've been there, and I know what brings you to that spot, and it's usually some fantastic, amazing, awe-inspiring story. And I know you have one. One day, you got to come back and tell us that. But anyway, so do you want to talk a minute about carnitine and carnosine? We've got 5 minutes. Or what do you want to talk about?
Well, let me see. I mean, let's talk about real healing. And basically, the most half the battle of healing is a belief that you will heal. That's half the battle. So basically, if you are sick, and I don't care what the illness is, multiple sclerosis, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, you name it, half the battle is believing that you can overcome the illness. That is so important. So positive intention is huge. And the second thing after that is, you know, giving the body what it needs, because what we talked about, the body's intrinsic ability to heal. And then there's targeted supplements. I'm a big believer in targeted supplements. And basically, you just need a basic, you know, vitamin and mineral formula. And again, the Awesome Four, some metabolic cardiology, and omega-3s. I mean, that's my basic program. And I would tell people to use a program like that and to live authentically, like I was talking about before. It is so important to live authentically because you just want to bring up your vibration. And the more you give, the more you're going to receive. And the more love you put out, again, it's going to come back to you. So, again, hostility and anger, those are emotions that will bring the vibration down. We want to bring the vibration up. And we're talking about foods. The healthiest food that I know, Eva, for general vitality and that will literally dance yourselves is kale. Kale to me is the healthiest food of all time.
I love it.
Because it elicits nitric oxide, and that's what your body needs, especially anybody with a cardiac event, because nitric oxide dilates the body's cells. So I'm a big believer in natural plants, and the best plant is kale.
EECP therapy? We've got 3 minutes.
Yeah, EECP is fine. I mean, basically, that's good for people with angina who have, you know, lots of chest discomfort, and it's not responding to other forms of therapy. I like EECP. It works. I mean, it's okay.
Oh, I have one more question. I almost forgot it. I've been trying to think of it. Do you know Burton Goldberg?
Burton? Sure, I know Burton. I've known him for 30
Burton,
years.
Burton, he's one of my buddies, and he like, called me up and insisted that I get these oral stem cells from somebody that he knows. And I did.
Yeah.
And then I get on the phone with Bruce Lipton, and Bruce Lipton laughed at me and said, that's not going to do anything, Eva. So I have this package of oral stem cells from a sheep placenta. Will they do
anything? Sheep placenta, yeah.
Will they do
anything? Yeah, I actually took them myself for 3 years, Eva.
Do they work?
I was trying to prevent a hip replacement. I almost did it, but I ended up fighting it for 10 years, and I ended up getting a hip replacement.
Oh, wow.
I just couldn't walk. But basically, I think sheep placenta stem cells will give you growth factors for sure, and I do believe that they will help. The only problem is they're very expensive. You know,
yeah, they
are
were.
Expensive.
So, do you take it while your heart is, or while you're sick, still sick, or do you... Wait, like now, should I have taken it at the very beginning when I was my heart attack?
No, you can take it. You can take them any time. You can take them any time.
So it doesn't matter when you take them?
It doesn't matter. You know, okay. I mean, you can take 6 a day, 3 a day. I mean, I think they do help. I don't think you have to take them for years and years that other people are doing.
My producer just jumped in and said I have 30 seconds. So tell us your website one more time.
Oh, heartmdinstitute.com. And there's drsinatra.com as well. That's commercial, but the Heart MD Institute is all video and information and good stuff.
Thank you so much for coming on my show. Your books are fabulous, and people don't forget about the grounding book. It's called Earthing, and I went out and bought the Earthing sheet, and I slept for the first time all night without any anxiety for the first time in years. And you have
Eva.
I know you're going on a trip. Have a safe trip. And I sent you 2 books, so I hope you'll take them along with you and let me know what you think of them when you get back.
Thanks, Eva. God bless. We'll see
you. God bless you too, Steve. Bye.